You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the newsroom at Eater, I'm Amanda Kloot.
And I am Daniel Janine.
And this is Eater's Digest, a show about all things food and dining.
With a little help from the biggest names in the world of food and the team here at Eater, we try to understand what's happening right now in kitchens, restaurants, and dining rooms around the world.
Today on the show, we tackle the biggest question in food. How the hell do you get into the hardest to get into restaurants? We are going to hear from some Eater editors about their tips and tricks, and then Dan and I are actually going to go out in the field to test a theory of mine.
And then later in the show, we will get into this week's biggest food stories, including some crazy seagull behavior on the Jersey Shore.
Oh, yeah.
A nitpick thing I have with cocktail culture, Yelp being super duper shady.
If you love the show, please tell a friend. That's all we want. Just tell one friend that you love it. Eater's Digest. Also, send us an email, digest@eater.com, to tell us how you're feeling and if there's something you want us to talk about. Let's do it. So, Dan.
Yo.
Everybody has their tips and tricks and hacks and little strategies for how to get into the hardest to get into restaurants, the places with the crazy long waits.
Everyone's got their tips.
Here are some of our favorites from the experts at Eater.
Just go on a Monday. Not everyone loves dining out on Mondays, but I think it's kind of nice. It's got a little treat at the beginning of the week.
Typically, I eat out later than most people. I'm kind of a night owl. And so generally speaking, my easiest tip is to show up early, or for people like me, to show up late.
You're just going to have to make peace with sitting at the bar. Max three people. Just make it a little easier on yourself.
Go on a day where everybody else is watching TV. So Super Tuesday, election night, the Super Bowl, things like that.
What I recommend doing is talk to the bartender. Tell them that you are looking for a seat. Is there any people that they think are kind of nearing the end of their meal, winding down, any specific place you should stand?
I simply used the alert notification on a service known as Resy, and they send you a little push notification. And it tells you when someone has canceled their reservation. And it usually works out really good on rainy days.
Always have a backup so that you're not standing in the West Village scrolling through your phone.
It's really, truly incredible. If it rains, people will cancel their reservations literally anywhere.
See if you can find an email from the restaurant and say, hey, I'm in from out of town. You are one of the top places on my list. And see if they're the kind of place that will be open to that.
Dan, I know you pride yourself in your ability to talk your way into restaurants and to get into restaurants in general.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just give us rapid fire some of your favorites?
These tips are all great. I would say don't use any single one of them. Use them all together. Have them all ready to go. That is my first point.
Okay.
Second point, I can't remember what the quote was, but there's a quote from Game of Thrones where Melisandre, the magician, the red woman, talks about magic is about doing all the work ahead of time and then looking effortless in the moment.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a good motto for life.
That's a good motto
for life.
Be
prepared.
A lot of the work for getting into restaurants should be done ahead of time. It is not good to think of a city with hard to get into restaurants as like, I want to go anywhere. Pick four or five that you want to get good at getting into. And
okay.
Then establish yourself in those places. Make sure you're freaking wonderful. Huge tip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know if I've added that much to this, but I think in general, one of my overall approaches to life is to ask people for things when you don't need anything from them.
Love it.
So like once you're already in a place, Once you're already in the nightclub, that's when you establish yourself as a person to know with the bouncer, not when you're like, hey, bud, let me in. Gotcha?
Yes. Another great life lesson. I love it. I love it. So I have this theory, which is very relevant, given that we're in the dog days of summer, and this is the one that we're testing out on the show today.
Okay.
So the theory is, in the summertime, in rich neighborhoods, in wealthy neighborhoods, the people who live there go away. So in New York especially, they go to the Hamptons. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are other examples in LA or Austin or San Francisco or Chicago. So my theory is, if you go to a neighborhood where the residents are wealthy, the restaurants will be easier to get into. So like if you go to Bushwick right now on a Saturday, it's jam-packed because people don't have a ton of money in Bushwick. If
you
go to
They're younger.
Yeah. If you go to Tribeca, people are older. They have lots of money. One of the most expensive zip codes in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Easier to get in.
What is unique about Tribeca, though, it is not slammed with tourists.
And not slammed with tourists. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so we came up with a list of 5 restaurants in different neighborhoods,
yep.
All pretty wealthy neighborhoods that we thought would be good case studies that are all very busy. Atla, which is close to me, is usually about 30 to an hour to get into.
Mm-hmm. In the West Village, Via Carota and Isodi, both super, super hard to get into.
Probably the hardest.
Hardest in the city.
Yeah, Pastis, which is newer. It's a reopened version of an old famous restaurant that is in Meatpacking, which is slammed with tourists.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
And then your darling.
Frenchette in Tribeca, which was the inspiration for this theory because it's in a neighborhood that just, I think, completely empties out on the weekends.
All right, Amanda, so let's do what we do best, which is leave the office and go to restaurants.
Let's do it.
Yeah, okay. So it is 7 o'clock-ish, 7:15.
Yeah.
We are in a cab on our way to stop one Pastis. We are going to hit a bunch of different restaurants and see if we get in.
Oh, yeah, this is fine.
Okay.
Hi. We're wondering what the wait is for 2 right now.
Wait for 2. Do we have a reservation?
No, just walking in.
I can do something on the patio right now if you'd like.
Really? Okay, cool. Just wondering. Thank you so much. The theory worked. You could walk in 7:22 on a Saturday night, and you're in.
That was a win.
That was a win. Total win. So then we hopped into a cab and made our way to Isodi, which, Daniel, tell me what you think. I think it's one of the hardest reservations in the city.
Yeah, it's like a 2-3 hour wait, guaranteed.
Yeah, guaranteed.
We don't have a reservation. We were wondering if we could walk in for 2.
Just give me one moment, and then I'll get you an estimate. For bar seats, okay?
We waited outside for a bit while he checked for bar seats.
How long did he quote us? An hour and a half?
Yeah, I mean,
is less.
That's 9 p.m. Isodi, Saturday night. That is primo.
If we weren't
doing this, we would go have a drink and wait and maybe even get called in at like 8:45.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, even though it's still an hour and a half, that is an hour and a half against what I would have expected to be 3 hours.
Yeah, 7:30 at Isodi, I would have expected over 2.
So maybe you're 2 for 2. From there, we went to another West Village hotspot. Maybe the West Village's hottest spot,
yeah.
Via Carota, where you go a fair amount and the wait is always insanity, like 2-3 hours.
I didn't have high hopes for this one because I feel like it's kind of insurmountable. You know, it doesn't matter what, you could be a blizzard and there's still a wait there.
And even when we got there was like a group walking in right ahead of us.
Yeah.
It was a guy and a girl, and the girl said, absolutely not when she heard how long the wait was.
Absolutely not.
Hi, should we wait for 2?
Initially, we were quoted 3.5 hours.
So 3.5?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of...
And then she kind of walked that back a little bit.
So what did they tell you when you walked in and asked for a table for 2?
Okay, so she said she didn't have anything for 2 until 11, which is 3 hours.
Three and a half hours
from now. But she did say that if we were to just hang out, have a drink, that something would probably open up because she said, quote, a lot of people aren't coming back tonight. So I feel like it's actually way easier than we would have thought.
It was a soft 3.5.
Soft 3.5.
Very
soft. According to her list, technically 3.5, but according to her ninja maitre d' skills, like, I bet you're waiting around for 20 minutes before you actually get to eat. At this point, I was feeling pretty confident.
Okay.
So then we walked from Via Carota and headed over to Adla.
This place is slammed always.
But that night, they had a table right away.
We only reserve the inside. The patio is first come, first serve.
Oh, yeah.
So it gives us double a restaurant.
Yeah, right when we walked up, they clearly had some tables outside. We talked to the host, and she even said the neighborhood felt a little dead.
Yeah, because rich people live there.
But even in the neighborhood, like, you see how it's a little more quiet. But this is prime time, too. So
what is our score right now? I'll give you a point on pasties.
We could have sat down immediately at pasties. I'll take half a point.
Half a point on Esodi. I'll give you half a point on Esodi.
We're still going to have to wait an hour and a half, which was low for Esodi, but still, like.
Via Carota, another half a point?
Half a point for Via Carota.
Yeah.
Because she very strongly implied we were sitting down soon.
A full shiny point for Atla.
Full point.
All right, but the fifth stop to me was the most important because this is the one that you based this entire theory off
of. Inspired the theory.
And it's not that I wanted you to be wrong.
You did.
No, I didn't. I did not want you to be wrong, but it was certainly the stop that I was most looking forward to. And we went to, we hopped in a cab and we headed over to Franchette.
My sister had her bachelorette in Tribeca last year and the whole neighborhood was empty. It was in August. The whole neighborhood was completely empty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because everyone is so rich in Tribeca that they just leave. And that's what made me think, oh, this is a theory for restaurants. And then I went to Franchette last month and it was like not that busy.
Mm.
So people were, you know, it was still full, but they told me that there were more walk-ins than usual.
We showed up to Franchette.
Yeah, this is fine.
And there was outdoor seating available, and it was a nice night out. I was pretty surprised.
But there's also a crowd of people waiting.
There was.
It wasn't a for sure.
Just because you see an open table, it doesn't mean that there are open tables.
It's 8:15, we were standing outside Franchette. It looks like there are open tables on the patio behind us. So I'm feeling really good. But I also see a lot of people loitering.
Yeah, bad sign.
Bad sign. Bad sign.
Where did we end up having dinner that night?
Yeah, I mean, we ate at Franchette.
Yes.
Because there were seats.
Yes. We could sit down right away.
The maitre d' even confirmed your theory. Fairly unprompted.
A little prompted.
Yeah,
a
pretty prompted.
I mean, I asked him, and he said...
On an August, specifically an August Saturday, yes.
Yes, that all the fancy people in the neighborhood are off for the weekend. And he said that he used to live in Williamsburg, and there was a real shift when the neighborhood got fancy, because all of a sudden, in the summertime, you could go to the best restaurants for Saturday night dinner and for brunch, because people got rich enough that they were going to the Rockaways and the Hamptons.
So at what point did you call him ahead of time to get him to say that? I guess in the end of this, I would say that you were more right than not right.
More That's right than not sure. Right is fair.
I was expecting a couple of these places to be porous. Atla, because I'm close to there, mm-hmm. so I'm familiar with it. Mm-hmm. I think the one that really proved your point for me was Esodi,
yep.
because we had already established that neighborhood was... filled with tourists,
yeah.
and at that, and Esodi is a culinary destination, is a place where someone who knows what they're doing comes to New York. That may be the only restaurant they want to go to.
I wish we had had time to actually test out Via Carota. That's the one where I think if we had gotten to sit, it would have proven the theory.
Yeah,
because she gave us this crazy long quote, mm-hmm. but then kind of wink and a nod said, "I, you know, like, oh, just hang out. You can probably get a table."
Yeah.
I think that would really show.
You mean
what happened?
You wish we ate some food there instead of running around a bunch of restaurants in New York with a microphone and just asking them how long it would take to sit down and then
in
leaving?
In retrospect, it might have been a more enjoyable time.
No, I agree with you. But I think based on her wink, wink, nudge, nudge, I have faith as well that we would have gotten in there quite quickly.
Mm-hmm. I think moral of the story is if you were listening to this in August and you live in a city with popular restaurants, go to them.
Yeah. We'll be right back with the biggest stories of the week.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Amanda, now in the show, we are going to run through the biggest food stories of the week.
We are
going to separate them with a little sound of a ding like this. You ready?
Yeah.
What you got first?
All right, Daniel.
Yo.
It is August, prime beach season. One of the nuisances of going to the beach and eating at the boardwalk
is
seagulls.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay. There are some towns in New Jersey where the seagulls have become such a nuisance that people don't know what to do. The carts selling food play the crazy sounds of birds in distress so birds don't come by. They put spikes on the top of the food carts. It's become an issue.
Yeah.
They say that they see food taken from children on a daily basis and that there are swarms and swarms of gulls.
It's a crazy thing about living in the city is that, like, I know that that's a thing and it's just not something I've experienced in forever. Like,
sure.
A seagull has taken my food once in my life, I think.
Yeah. Well, if you go to these seaside towns,
yeah,
you're dealing with it on the regular.
It's a sad, it's very sad, but it's kind of one of those things that, like, I respect how awful it is. And it's just like when something that's cute and it's part of the landscape starts really destroying your life. And it's kind of hard for outside people to be.
Because you're like, oh, cute, whatever. Seagulls, who cares? But if they're always attacking
you, they're causing irreparable damage.
I think they're to the tourism dollars. Anyway, so two stories.
Wow!
One story.
I thought we were going to have to scrounge some content out of that statement.
No, one story.
All right.
From the magazine Science, there was a study done with seagulls where they found that if you stare directly at the seagull, it is less likely to approach you and steal your food.
Wow.
They did a study where they had some people stare at the gull, and they all the people had bags of chips, and they had people not stare at the gull.
Yeah.
And you were way more likely to have your chips stolen if you were not looking at it. So good thing to know. It's like, you know, out in the wilderness, like, you know what to do when you see a bear.
Yeah.
It's like when you see a gull, stare at it.
When you see a bear, you don't stare at it.
I think you make yourself really big. It depends on what kind of bear. Grizzly and brown is different.
This is why people get mauled. There's so many bears.
Yeah, you gotta know your bears.
It's like, I feel like you need, there's so many, I feel like, you know, to open a kitchen in New York, you go through months of food service training, and yet it's just like old wives' tale what you're supposed to do for every bear.
But,
and one of them's gonna kill you, and one of them's not.
But when you go to places with a lot of bears, they do try to have information around.
Okay.
Like, you feel undereducated because you're not really
have
at
you
risk.
Started informing your young children on what?
I don't take them to bear places.
Have
no
you
way.
Taught them to make eye contact with
no
seagulls?
I will.
Should, I would love for
next
you to
time I go to the beach.
Out.
I will. So, Second story. One of these towns in New Jersey is fed up with the gulls, and they've come up with an interesting solution.
Mm-hmm.
They're hiring birds of prey to roam the skies from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day.
I love the use of hiring.
Yeah,
they're hiring.
The birds are, you know,
they're releasing them.
They are hiring a company that will release birds of prey to prowl the skies for 12 hours a day, every day, all summer long.
Oh, my God.
Don't you love it? Don't you love the idea of going to the beach and they're just like hawks and owls flying around screeching?
Well, I love the idea of seeing some really cute kid about to take a bite of his hot dog. A seagull just descends and everyone's like, oh, this is so sad. And then a massive bird phew. Just witnessing the murder of a bird.
No offense to our audience that are very sensitive about bird death.
Right, because I think seagulls are kind, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think they actually hurt the seagulls. They just scare them.
The birds of prey?
They don't hurt the seagulls. It's just their presence.
They're just bird consultants. They're like,
they just fly around, and them being there
Yeah.
Dissuades the seagulls
right.
from
like scarecrows.
Hanging. Yeah.
Right. Cool. I mean, this is the beginning of a horror film, though.
Sure.
Like, they're not getting back in the cages.
Yeah, and then they have to get bigger birds.
Then bigger birds. I feel like every week something new comes out about how shady the delivery business is.
Yes, every week.
There's a good one this week. So Yelp is partnered with Grubhub, which is one of the leading delivery platforms.
Mm-hmm. Also, same company as Seamless.
Yeah. And Grubhub and Seamless have been under fire for charging restaurants for canceled orders.
Yeah.
They're not doing the best right now, public image-wise. But a story came out this week about how Yelp has, for each restaurant, a phone number on the page for, like, once you've, you know, you've seen some reviews, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. great reviews, you're like, this is where I'm going to order from
sure.
right now. There's an option to call the restaurant to place an order. What is happening when you use the number provided by Yelp is it's actually a dummy number that routes the call through Grubhub's system to give Grubhub and then Yelp a little kick
yeah.
back of your delivery.
So now not one, but two companies are taking a cut of this delivery order that you are placing with a restaurant.
And they're not even doing anything for
no,
it.
No, Yelp's not doing anything. Like, it's such bullshit.
Yeah. This is wild. I mean, it's just like, it's such a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
There's just so much of this that's really shady.
It's hard to know what to do as a consumer because sometimes you call a restaurant directly, even not using these numbers, like using their real number, and you feel like they would much rather you just entered it on mm-hmm. Seamless because mm-hmm. it's annoying to take your call. But then I feel like, well, now Seamless is taking a cut of this, and if I do it directly, then they won't take a cut, blah, blah, blah. Like, what's the right thing to do? I think this with OpenTable as well, because I know OpenTable takes a cut of every restaurant reservation I'm making. Like, they charge a dollar to the restaurant.
Yeah.
So I should just call the restaurant and make it with them directly, but I'm also lazy.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I think you have to look at the volume of the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at a neighborhood place, you know, someplace that you where you know the people, I would take time and go ask.
Yeah.
At some point and be like, would you rather me just put this
be
stuff
like,
in
what
through,
is the best way to do this?
Through Seamless. And with OpenTable, I would do the same thing. But if it's a McDonald's or if it's a big, well, sure. high volume, even a lot of the New York delis, which just do such massive business, very rarely are mm-hmm. people who answer the phone invested in the bottom line of the,
restaurant. A lot of restaurants, they don't speak English, too.
Right.
So, like, they're annoyed having to try to figure out what you want
yeah.
when I could just do it over Grubhub. But then Grubhub's taking their cut. The Yelp inclusion is just, like, ridiculous.
It's bonkers.
Like, you guys did not have to get involved.
But they can do so much for a restaurant's visibility. So
yeah.
they are involved in a sense, you know, like if you want
no,
business.
No, they are involved. They just yeah. didn't have to they didn't have stick their little grubby fingers in there.
This is one of the shadiest things I've heard Yelp do. They were charging for premium placement at one point.
I think that was shadier.
Yeah.
There were all these stories about them pressuring small business owners to advertise with them so that their ratings could go up
yeah.
or they could take care of things when they get like 1-star reviews. And that was shadier. Like
that's
referrals,
some mob shit.
Referrals and kickbacks are happening all over the internet in all yeah. kinds of ways.
I take it back. You are right.
But no. But it's also like I just don't appreciate that they're in the mix here.
Well, if you believe the stories and that Yelp is slipping a little, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's important to get their hooks in while they can because they need some vacation homes.
Just squeezing the little guy. Daniel, there's a story that's making the rounds this week. It's an Ask Polly column. I don't know if you're familiar, but it's the advice column from New York Magazine. It's from a woman whose in-laws are very intolerant to her mushroom allergy.
Mm-hmm.
So she's allergic to mushrooms in a very serious way. She will go to the hospital if she has one. She could die. And she's asked her in-laws to stop serving mushrooms at family functions, and they basically refuse.
What? They refuse?
They refuse.
They're like, sorry, we're going to keep serving mushrooms?
Pretty much, yeah.
Why, they just hate her?
I think that is what it is.
Yeah.
Because her question to the advice columnist is, what do I do? How did I cause this rift? How do I fix the rift? And
right.
it's like, they hate you, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I also wonder if there's something else going on.
Which is? What else could be going on?
Like, maybe there's something else wrong with her, and that's why they're trying to poison her and kill her.
but that would still mean they hated her.
Yeah.
One thing this makes me think of, and this is the thing I don't like about myself, but when I'm at a dinner, especially if it's a restaurant I'm excited about trying and they have, you know, some interesting menu items, and I'm with someone who has allergies, not so much a nut allergy. A nut allergy, I feel like, is just, it's stat. I get it. I'm used to it. Mm-hmm. But it's like when someone is allergic to eggplant or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I can't do the eggplant dish or whatever. I hate that person at the time. I hate them. And I feel bad about it because it's not their fault. But I just.
Yeah, it's definitely a personal failing of yours, right?
I'm just saying it is like, because I'm such a good person, I think that it's, if we were looking to justify the family's behavior at all, mm-hmm. like there could be a little bit of good in them, which is just like the part of them that's like me, which is just frustration because they can't eat mushrooms because they love mushrooms so much.
One funny thing was the husband.
Okay, you want to move on?
No, the husband said that they weren't super into mushrooms before, but mm-hmm. now there's like mushrooms
Whoa,
in every dish.
Okay.
So it's not even like they're mushroom obsessives mm-hmm. and she's keeping them from their one true love, which is mushrooms.
Yeah. Hey, Dad, can we talk about dinner tonight? We didn't used to serve all these mushrooms.
Like, what is up?
Honey, your wife is really, your mother is really into mushrooms now, okay? It has nothing to do with your wife. That, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting, I guess. Has anyone ever tried to poison you?
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you wouldn't. I guess you wouldn't know. I don't know. I mean, I think that a lot of people who cook chicken at home touch it and then touch other shit because they're not clean enough. And like
oh, yeah.
part of them knows this could be a case of salmonella.
Sure.
But they're like, oh, I've already started this dish, so mm-hmm. I'm not going to stop now.
Yeah.
I've never done that. I've never rolled the dice of salmonella.
Sounds like you have. looks like you have.
Well, I hate my brother's girlfriend. Just kidding. Just kidding. Dang. I love Catherine.
Daniel, there was a story out this week about how all of those quote-unquote biodegradable bowls mm-hmm. that they use at a lot of these fast casual chains actually are not biodegradable.
Yeah. Sucks.
Sucks. I don't know what the take is. Just like, oops, whoops-a-daisy.
Why aren't they biodegradable? They just have a lot of bad chemicals?
The molded fiber bowls were coated in PFAS compounds, which yeah. is a class of fluorinated compounds that don't biodegrade naturally, mm-hmm. sometimes called forever chemicals. So not a good look for those fast casual chains that are using these quote-unquote biodegradable bowls. Also, there was a story out in the New York Times a couple months ago about how even when people do use these bowls, they don't get rid of them properly.
No.
Like they did a study where hired these consultants to come in to try to assess how people were throwing things away and how everything was going. And yeah. like everybody was doing it wrong. They were putting things in the wrong bins. And when you take it back to your office, you recycle it wrong. And it's a mess.
I like it when you see three receptacles.
Oh, know? Yeah.
It's great, but I just watch people use them and nobody gives a shit.
No.
No one cares at all.
No. I love on the New York City subway system, they say that all of the trash cans get hand sorted. Mm-hmm. So you can throw anything you want there. So you throw your cans, your newspapers, your food.
By employees?
By somebody. Yeah. They realized it was cheaper to hire a firm to sort all the garbage than to have separate bins because people put the wrong stuff.
I love math. This reminds me a lot of the paper straw story that just came out of the UK. McDonald's in the UK subbed out all of their plastic straws for quote-unquote recyclable, biodegradable
paper
straws.
Because the government banned single-use plastic, right?
Right. The problem was McDonald's had to make the paper straws really thick so they could still work with the milkshakes.
Oof.
And now they no longer are recyclable.
Yikes. Yikes.
But they still break down. I think it's funny because I think with a lot of these things, it's more about the image for the company than it is for...
virtue signaling that like, oh, we really care. And actually your thing is coated in chemicals.
Yeah. Like, did you get the biodegradable bowls? Yeah, we got them. One issue. They're covered in something called the forever chemical. Don't worry about it.
It's fine.
Just roll them out.
It's okay because 70% of our people are just throwing them in the wrong bin.
90% of people
anyway.
They're just throwing them on the ground outside. It doesn't really matter. I feel like fancy cocktails in restaurants are now a fact of life.
Yeah.
But it hasn't always been the case, right? Like it,
nope.
It started growing post like 2010. That's when we felt the cocktail revolution.
Sure. And you go to some cities and you go to restaurants and they don't have cocktails or they have very basic cocktails. Mm-hmm. And you think, wait, what's going on? What happened?
What do you mean?
Did I go back in time?
A thing that really frustrates me in restaurants is when you're reading through the cocktail menu and the cocktails have insanely long names, like A Long Walk Through the Woods or like Strawberry Fields Forever and Ever and Ever, right?
Because then you have to say it to the bartender?
Well, I don't, but I'm just curious. Like,
what do you say then?
I pick a word or I pick the spirit that is central in it.
You're like, you know, this one with the mezcal and the long name.
No, exactly. I'll be
like, I refuse to say.
I don't feel like I'm being punky. I just don't like sitting there and being like, it's just too many words to say. Like, no menu item should be that. No menu item is that long either. Like, yeah. You would just be like, I'll have the beef. So I like to do that. I'll have the strawberry one or I'll have the mezcal one. I think that that is enough. How do you do it? Do you regurgitate the whole long name?
I don't think it comes up.
Yes, it does.
So frequently yes, it for does. Me because I've never thought about it. I just say the name of the cocktail. Can I tell you my pet peeve about cocktails?
You just say the whole name of the cocktail?
Yeah.
Like you will be like, I'll have Whispering in the Woods Alone.
Yeah. Maybe it's happened to me once. I don't know.
That is so fun. We go to the same restaurant. What?
Maybe I just go to the wine list at those places.
Like, and you're so desperate not to say the long thing that you skip.
Like, this is not
skip.
A thing I've encountered in my life that much. What is an example of a restaurant with a long cocktail?
With name? A long cocktail? I mean, yeah. Red Paperclip where I was.
Haven't been there yet. Not cool enough.
That doesn't mean that you haven't experienced this.
When I go there, I heard the whole Red Paperclip drinks program is bizarre, right? Like they don't have a wine list. They say this guy JP is the wine list. You have to talk to him.
It's so obnoxious.
Like that's cool. I love the idea of talking through my wine selection, but I would also like to look at a list and see prices and see what kinds of wines you guys have. Especially if I care about wine and really know wine, then I really want to dig
in. Well, then you should really meet JP.
Yes. Like, I'm psyched to go and talk to JP, but also, could I have some reading material?
And also, great restaurant. Go check it out. Don't mean to trash them too hard. I've got an example for you. This is not the best example because this is not that obnoxious. But I was at this restaurant, Wela, last night, or a few nights ago, a Thai place. And the drink that both of us ordered was the Land of Smiles. And I just hated saying that. How would you say that?
So it's not just length, it's cutesiness. You just don't like cutesy cocktail names.
As I say, this isn't the best example. Usually they'd be four times the length of this. It'd be like a full.
But at least it's not like racist or punny.
I'm not saying they're problematic.
It's not like
I would rather this happen.
Me up at like a Thai restaurant. Like that cocktail exists, you know? Like there's so many worse things than you having to say, what was it,
The Land of Smiles.
Yeah, like, I'll have the Land of Smiles. Like, what?
See, I'm like, well, you sound ridiculous.
Okay, can I tell you my pet peeve?
Yeah, you can tell me your pet peeve.
What I love when cocktail lists, like, I know this makes me sound like a kindergartner, it can imply to me what the cocktail is going to look like. So with drawings is especially helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But also if it just says served up or served on the rocks or served over crushed ice or something like that. And so many just say, you know, whatever the silly cocktail name is, and then they list five ingredients.
Yeah.
And if it says soda, that implies like, okay, this is going to be a little bit of an aperitif. I get that. But oftentimes it just lists ingredients and I don't really know what I'm going to get.
You're 100% right.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when you get something that's on ice or you get something that's carbonated or it's like in the little coupe, which is the elevated vessel.
Sure.
It's like, I feel like cocktail-wise, it's the equivalent of ordering a thing and not knowing if it's going to be a salad.
Yes.
You know, like, it's ridiculous because that you're getting a whole different texture. Like, you're getting a whole different cocktail experience.
It has gin. I know it has gin, but is it like a martini?
Yeah.
Or is this going to be something that's a little lighter and not going to give me a stroke?
There's a weird world of cocktail obsessives who would say that it is obvious based on the ingredients and the flavors what it's going to be.
But 75% of the audience is not going to know.
No. I don't care what those people think.
Yeah.
I think everything should be well described. I mean, when you go to a restaurant and there's pictures of the food, you're like, oh, that's basic, but also give me these pictures. Yes. You know, like there's a restaurant.
Like tiki bars are so great because oftentimes there's just a little picture. You're
all
like,
it takes
oh,
is
I
a
see.
Little crayon.
I just want a drawing of my drink.
Restaurants as a whole try to be so magical and so kind of mystic. And I think they can all tone it down a little bit and just the brilliance should come through in what is served, not how much of it is kept from the diner ahead of time.
Yeah. Make it easy.
Make it easy. That's right. What I'm saying, too. Make it easy. Make my drink. Can't just call my cocktails one word. Is that so hard? Is that so hard? Why? Yeah. Okay. You're like, make it easy. My point's really smart. And I'm like, make things one word. And you're like, oh, this guy's just a pedantic. Anyway.
No, your point is great.
Thank you so much for listening to the first episode of Eater's Digest. We really hope that you liked it. If you did like it, it would be awesome if you could tell a friend about it.
Tell a friend.
And then also tell them to listen to it.
Yeah.
Don't just say it in passing. Shoot us emails at digest@eater.com. Great email, actually. And make sure to subscribe to the show for more great content. Next week, we'll be doing something similar, but slightly different.
Big thank you to our Eater editors, Serena Dye, Stephanie Tudor, Ryan Sutton, and Sonia Chopra for contributing their tips.
Special thank you to Adam Musa, Millie McGinnis, and Ellie Krupnik for all their help putting this show together.
Thank you to our producer, Martha Daniel. Thank you for our wizardry of marketing, Zach Kahn. This show has been hosted by Amanda Clute and Daniel Janine. Goodbye.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.